to the Wisconsin Vegetable Garden Radio Show with your hosts, Joey and Holly Berry.
It's the Wisconsin Vegetable Gardener Radio Show on 860 AM WNOV and W293CX 106.5 live in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. So happy you've taken a little time out of your busy Saturday to join us on the program today. Oh, and the WisconsinVegetableGardener.com. You can find all of our links to all of the sponsors that make this show possible under the radio tab as well as the highlight tab on the right-hand side of the main page. And that website now contains 1,000-plus garden videos and continue to put more out each and every week. Well, one thing that many of us, whether we were gardeners or grew up in a gardening community or family, we've all seen the famous blue canning jar. And it's not like true blue, it's more of an aqua blue. But we're very familiar with this. We see this at yard sales, on people's mantles, shelves. We're going to talk about where it came from, how it came to be. Now, let's start with the start here. Ball Canning Corporation started in 1858. And they made canning jars, and they still make canning jars today.
I think they start with brown ones, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, there's brown ones, and then there's, like, purple ones, and then there's green. Mm-hmm. Which are more rare. I mean, if you get a brown or a purple one, those are worth probably some money. The blue ones that we're talking about that most of us are familiar with are very common, and people say, well, how much is it worth? It's really how much you can get somebody to pay for it, because they're so plentiful that there's not really a value in it. It's more of a an heirloom or a sentimental or a passed down to family. I've got.
You know who's making money? This craft store. They're selling one jar for like $2.50.
The blue canning jars.
No, just regular canning.
Oh, regular canning jars.
Yeah. So there you go. If you want to sell one canning jar, maybe you might make some money.
But these have been passed down from many generations. I have some on a shelf at home. They're half gallon blue canning jars from my great grandfather, which primarily was probably heavily used between 1930 and 1960. Was really the prime time that those would have been used. So what we're going to talk about here, how did they come to be and all of that, Holly?
Okay, so the ball blue jars were manufactured from about 1890 to 1920. And they are kind of the distinctive known color of the canning jars or the old canning jars. So the reason they came to be was there was this landmark called the Hoosier Slide, which was a large sand dune. It was from kind of bordering this creek that was going into Lake Michigan. So it was a sand dune on Lake Michigan in Indiana. And it was popular. People would go take pictures with it, or, you know, if they had wedding photos, they'd go take wedding photos there. So what happened was that while they were developing Michigan City, Indiana, they started to take this Hoosier Slide down, and the people would use that for glass making. And then over the period of 30 years, from 1890 to 1920, 13.5 million tons of sand were shipped from the Hoosier Slide until this dune was leveled, and they were shipped to the glass-making companies.
And because of that sand that was in this dune, because of the chemical components of it, that's why the glass was a blue color, not a clear glass as we're familiar with today in normal everyday items.
Right. So they feel that it was because of the chemical analysis. It was a lower percentage of iron, a higher percentage of aluminum, and less magnesium. So because of the science of the sand, who knows how this dune was at the time. I mean, if this was the late 1800s, who knows how long that was there for before they started building the city. And so it was that particular sand that made them blue.
Now, if you see these old canning jars and these blue ones, there are numbers on the bottom. And what does these numbers represent? Is there some kind of science behind that, or what does the numbers mean?
It just the numbers are whoever made the jars that day. So you stamped your jar. You were jar maker 15. So you stamped your jar with jar 15.
And at the end of that shift, they paid you for however many jars you made.
I'm assuming it was something like that.
In the early days, these were hand blown jars,
right?
And that's why you see, if you get some really old ones, you can see that the it's not symmetrical. It's not smooth.
There are
bumps and gouges and bubbles.
Yeah, we have one that's almost like a funnel shape. It's not. It doesn't have the clear shoulders. It kind of funnels up more like a milk bottle type. I don't know how to describe it, but yeah. So there's different ones. There's definitely.
And then at a certain point in the late 1890s, early 1900s, then they went to mold making, where they actually infused the glass into a mold, and then they were more symmetrical all the way through the production with that. Now, you can identify, and there's many charts online, to how old is your blue canning jar, or how old is your canning jar at all. Ball is primarily the number one source of canning jars, which they have been from day one. The font size and angle of the word ball on the canning jar identifies what decade or what time frame it was made. Each block of time from 1896 to 1858 all the way to the 1970s, they have changed the font after a certain period of time. So whether it has a line underneath it, whether it's more at an angle or straight across, that helps you kind of identify this is from 1913 to 1923 type of identification.
Right. So Ball was the original jar makers, and then Kerr came along, and then also Atlas. So Kerr is...
And then there was like Drury, D-R-E-Y.
Right, that was later.
That was later.
Mm-hmm. But so those were the original. And then Kerr came up with the wide mouth jar. So I couldn't find any information on this. I'm going to assume it was some sort of marketing thing where they're like, hey, we're going to do this because Ball, Ball has the game here. We're going to come up with these wide mouth jars. I'm going to assume that's what happened. That's a loose assumption based on my little knowledge of marketing that I have.
And there's kind of a rumor or a myth going across the internet, and this has been for several years now. On the bottom of your blue canning jar, if you have a number 13, the theory or the thought or the myth is, oh, that's a rare jar. And the reason why is, back in the day, moonshiners would use canning jars to haul their liquor illegally across wherever they needed to sell it. And the rumor was that the moonshiners would, when they grabbed their jars, if they saw a 13, they would break it right away because it was supposed to be unlucky. And that's simply not the case.
No, it's not true. It's just like an old wives' tale, an old canning jar wives' tale.
Yeah.
There's wives' tales and everything, and that is one of them. So they are not rare at all. The stories you hear is not true. What's more rare is probably finding an old purple or brown jar or even green jar versus finding a blue jar with a 13 on the bottom.
And there are, I've seen as high as 15. I've really not seen anything like 19 or, higher than 15 on the bottom of jars. Now, maybe you've got some, and there's some people looking at their blue jars right now to see what numbers they have. Primarily, we have in our collection 1s through 12, 1 through 10, something like that is a lot of the repetitive numbers in that realm. Now, people, and these had the old zinc lids.
Right. They had the zinc lids with like kind of like a wax on top.
And some of them had a gasket later on.
Mm-hmm.
One, you don't want to use that. You want to use a two-piece lid nowadays. And secondly, why should we not be canning in our old blue jars?
Well, first of all, now that you know the history, you know that they were lastly made at the most recent was in 1920. That was almost 100 years ago. And while canning jars are made to stand up to hot temperatures and to be used over time, the technology to make jars now is a lot better. So if you think about it, there could be tiny cracks in there. They may not seal right. I mean, you can certainly try. You can certainly use them. But if you have these cool, neat old blue jars, why would you take the chance of breaking them in your canner?
There's a lot of hairline fractures whenever you look at them, and it's not safe. And there are a lot of pints and quarts, but there is a lot of half-gallon jars, too, and we can't safely can in half-gallon jars anyway, regardless if we buy new from the hardware store or have these passed down through generations.
Right.
And the reason why, let's go over the half-gallon.
The only things that you can can in a half-gallon jar safely are apple juice and grape juice. And it's simply because a half-gallon jar is too large for anything else to be canned safely to get the heat inside of it to make sure that it's removing what needs to be removed, all the bad stuff, and getting a proper seal.
Now, I understand that our grandparents or great-grandparents or parents canned in half-gallon jars their entire life, and they lived to be 193 years old, and they were fine to the day they died. But because of science and technology, we understand that's not the safe thing now for 2017 to be processing anything except for apple juice and grape juice in these half-gallon jars. Plus, you have to have a container deep enough to get 2 inches of water above the lid of them, and most canners, or all canners that I'm aware of, unless you have a giant stock pot, won't allow for that depth to get the jar deep enough. And you don't want to put the jar on its side.
No.
In any form or fashion, no matter what type of jar you're using in the canning procedure. So the history of the Blue Canyon jar, now you know a little bit more. And if you do have jars in your family, maybe you can find out a little bit about who used them and when they were used and a little bit information about that to kind of carry on in your life that you can pass them on to other family members.